Good to be with you all. Thanks, Ron, for reading that for us. I'm sure most of you are aware of these last several months, we've been in a preaching series called The Spirit of the Disciplines, looking at the disciplines of the Christian life. We've been looking at things like fasting, prayer, service, Bible meditation, fellowship, and life and community together. One of the things that we've been asking is, like, what are these things for? Growing up, I kind of thought, okay, the more I do these things, the more God will probably like me, and I'll probably be a better Christian. And some of that, at least in terms of growing as a Christian, is true. But one of the things that we've been looking at is how these disciplines, these practices, aren't just for us personally, but they're actually for our life as a church and actually for the life of God in our city. We've been using this definition of the disciplines, that they are intentional practices we do that help us orient our lives together around the gospel for our joy and for the joy of our cities. And what's interesting about that definition that we've been using is that right in the very beginning, we see that these disciplines are not just for my personal holiness, my personal piety, but they're actually designed to demonstrate the good news of Jesus to our city, to those that don't yet know Jesus. And so today we're going to look at the next discipline, which is the discipline of rest. And when you think about rest, what kind of stuff comes to mind? Anybody? Sleep? Snoring? Maybe Netflix? On the couch? Nap on a rainy day? I think a beach vacation, even though that's not my favorite kind of vacation, I think a beach, and I think rest. Getting off work. Again, we all have these mental images of what we think rest is about. But what's interesting, though, is rest as a practice, in many ways, is lost in the church, and that we don't really have a grip on what rest really means. For many of us, rest is simply a way to get back to work. Because in our culture, we are driven by work, which is actually an incredible understatement. For many of us, we take our laptops home, we take our work home, we have a work cell phone, we have a personal cell phone, and a lot of that occupies a space at our dinner table. Again, that's not necessarily wrong, but what's interesting is that our work, in many ways, has increasingly invaded the spaces where we would normally rest. And if you were to step back, even like what Scott did when we talked about fellowship and community, and over these last weeks when we've looked at the disciplines, if you step back and look at culturally where we are, you realize that in a lot of ways, work and our rest has changed because of culture and because of technology. 100 years ago, when the sun went down, or the factory shut down, or the machines broke, you were done. There was no more work to do. You couldn't do any more work. There was no light to see to do work. But now, with the rise of technology, you can work 24/7 if you wanted. You can get off your day job, and why not get a second job? Why not try to make a little bit more? Why not try to get a little bit more ahead? There's always more to do. There's always more ways to squeeze one little bit of productivity into each fleeting hour of our day. And again, this is just built into culture. This is normal now. But why is that? Is it any wonder that the rise of our ability to work 24/7 has also risen with our caffeine obsession? Like, I didn't even think about that until this week. I thought, oh my gosh, Red Bull and Starbucks are killing it right now. They're crushing it because we need more and more caffeine to keep our broken, fragile bodies able to keep screaming and doing more and more work. Why is that? Why is it that even on our vacations, when we're supposed to be resting, let's try to do one more thing. Let's try to get one more thing done. This past May, me and Jana took a trip out to Utah. We were driving around, seeing some national parks, you know, vacation, rest. And for about 4 or 5 days, I drove us thousands of miles all across Utah. Let's go see one more thing. Let's go see one more hike. Let's go do one more thing. And by the time day 5 hit, Jana said, can we just stop? Can we just be still? Do we have to go see one more thing? And I realized, here I am, thousands of miles from home, supposed to be on a vacation, and for some reason, I keep thinking, we got to get one more thing in. I got to get one more picture for Instagram. I got to do one more thing before the sun goes down and this day ends. I need to make the most out of my vacation. And why is that? Why are we like that? Why are we arguably the most overstressed, overworked, underrested people? Maybe even in the whole world. Why is it that we cannot lay our doing down? Why do we feel that even the weekends are time to just get more done, get a little bit more ahead? Why do we all secretly, if you're anything like me, why do you worship and hold up the person who burns the midnight oil? Why do you hold highly the person who works all weekend? Man, look at that. I should probably be more like that. Why do we all secretly feel our jobs and our positions aren't good enough? That we should probably be working harder and doing more and maybe picking up even a second job? Why do we covet the people who seem to even then do more with their family? They're just more active there on the go. Why do we always look to these other people and think, man, I'm not doing enough? Whether you're a CEO, a teacher, a parent, a mechanic, we all feel that drive. And at least one of the reasons why is because we're caught in a story. We're caught in a story that is causing us to believe something about us and about our world. We feel this constant, inner, daily compulsion to finish, to accomplish, and to achieve. And we're going to look more into why. One of the main reasons is because we live in a story that is telling us that we have something to hide. We have something that we're ashamed of, and so we will use our work and our doing to cover ourselves. Just like Adam and Eve in the garden, when they were exposed, what did they do? When their nakedness and their shame and guilt and their weakness and insecurity was seen, they used something to cover themselves. And we do the same with our work. So what do? Are we just trapped in this story that tells us, here's who you are, here's who you're supposed to be, and you better just keep getting it done? Well, let me ask you, what if God knew that we would be like this, so he provided an intentional practice in his wisdom, in his kindness, a practice that would call us out of that story and into his true story of what he's doing? And this is what the discipline of rest is all about, calling us out of that story and giving us space to enter back into the true story of God, the true story of the world. So the definition I'm going to use for the discipline of rest is our intentional practice of realizing and practicing our freedom from ought. Our freedom from ought. As we live in community with God's family and those we are sent to, it is freedom from that compulsion, that drive to always have to get more done. And if you're anything like me, you desperately, desperately need this. This is something that I am very, very weak in. You need something to continually pull you out of that wrong belief and put you back into the true story. So that's what the discipline of rest is about. That's what we're going to be looking at. I just have 3 quick points for us today. Point number 1 is laying aside our fig leaves. Point 2 is hearing the call to rest. And point 3 is entering the rest of God. So let's pray as we start this. Jesus, we do thank you that even now your spirit is with us, and that as we seek to think together about what it means to be a community that practices rest, we ask for your grace, Spirit. We ask that you would even help us to begin to make connections even right now as we listen and as we think, and pray, Spirit, that through this we would become a people who actually know how to regularly step into your rest that you've given us. In Jesus' name, amen. So let's look at point one, laying aside our fig leaves. If we really want to grab hold of what it means to rest, we first have to look at, why can't we rest? Why are we unable to rest? It would be foolish if I just gave you, like, here's 10 best steps for how to rest, when all the while there's something causing us from not being able to rest. And as I thought through this about why we're unable to rest, I thought about, it's kind of like when you go to the doctor and you can't make yourself better. You have some injury, some internal sickness, and you can't make yourself better. And maybe this is just in the movies, but I feel like doctors often say, well, I'm going to help you, but first I'm going to have to make it worse. Or I'm going to have to hurt you to make you better. A couple weeks ago, my wife, who is a nanny for two kids, actually had to experience this with one of the kids. This little girl that she nannies for, named Haley, she's two, and Haley was on their back deck, and she got a massive splinter in her foot. The splinter was like as long as her foot. And it hurt, but she was like, okay. But so Jana was like, I've got to get this thing out. So she had to get their dad, and they had to hold her down. She's screaming and flailing, and they had to pull that splinter out. Pulling the splinter out was more painful than the splinter itself, but it had to be done. And in many ways, like that silly, simple example, we all have something deeply wrong with us. And are we willing to undergo the ordeal of having that exposed for what it is? Are we willing to ask ourselves the hard question of, why can't I rest? Why can't I stop? We are going to have to lay aside the fig leaves of what we're using to cover ourselves, cover our shame. For many of us, we're holding on to these fig leaves of our endless work because we're disgusted with ourselves. We hate ourselves. You think you're not good enough. You don't measure up. So what do? You work all the times in different ways, not just in an occupation, but in everything you do to cover, to make yourself look better. And if you don't believe me, or if you are trying to figure out what this really looks like, let me ask you, why do we spend so much time trying to look good? Why do we spend so much time trying to lose weight? Why do we worry so much about our wardrobe and what we're going to wear? Why do we always have to find a new way to distinguish ourselves, a new trip to take, a new hobby to take up, a new experience that makes us look better or different than everybody else? These are just examples from my life. This is showing that the deep work we're doing doesn't just relate to our jobs. We're working all the time, trying to get ahead, trying to make ourselves look better. In a news article from just a couple weeks ago from CNN that they put out, they talked about a new mental health disorder on the rise, and it's called Snapchat dysmorphia. And this is legit. I will send you the article. What's happened is that through Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, people can put these filters on their faces. And if you do this, this is not wrong. But you put this filter on your face that, as one patient describes it, it beautifies who you are. Smooths out your wrinkles, maybe makes your eyes look a little bigger, your skin a little lighter and more glowy. And I watched an interview with a woman who's preparing to undergo facial plastic surgery to match this image that this filter gives her. And she just talked about it as if it's a very normal thing. Oh, this picture that she showed, the picture, makes my skin look lighter. It's just beautifying myself, that's all. She has to cover up. She has to beautify because she thinks of herself as unacceptable. What's interesting is that she's not, and we're not, just obsessed with image, but it's actually about how people perceive us. We are busy working, managing people's perception of us. And why is this? It's because simply at our most base level, we feel this need to be validated, to be approved, to know that we are loved for who we are. And again, this will look different for different people. Some of you might not really care what people think about you. Or you might not worry all the time about people's acceptance of you, but you probably work really, really hard to make sure you're better than everybody. At least by your own standards that you've made up. So we are wrapped up in a belief that if we achieve something, whatever that is for you, that then you'll have rest. If you only get this done, then you'll get rest. New job, new body, new relationship, new face. The next vacation, the next goal you need to accomplish. Find that, and then you'll rest. But does it ever deliver on its promise? So if we admit that we have this problem, we stand exposed. We stand uncovered, and we realize that this work that I'm doing all around, it can't define me. It can't. Because even my efforts are failing. And what's interesting is that it's right here, at this point, when we recognize that I'm just trying to cover up. I know it's all a farce. I know it's all an act. When we admit our barrenness and confess our own striving, it is right here that the voice of Jesus himself comes to us. Not in a command, not in an indictment of how bad we are, but actually in an invitation, as we heard read in Matthew. When we realize that we are fighting to cover ourselves and to cover our lack, Jesus comes and tells us, here's where true rest is. But his rest comes, interestingly enough, through stepping into his story. So let's look at point two, hearing the rest of God, which comes in the story of God. Jesus, through his Spirit, offers us rest by stepping into his story. And as we regularly talk about here, we always talk about the story of God, the story of God moving to dwell with his creation. Just a couple weeks ago, Scott walked us through that story again of how God has built a world where he wants to dwell with his people, where he creates a rest and calls Adam to expand that rest to the rest of the world. But because of Satan and sin and human rebellion, the rest of God is lost. God and man are torn apart. And God then calls and creates a people to spread that rest. But what happens with Israel? They fail. Until Jesus steps onto the scene and conquers the enemies and now is sending us to give witness to his victory. So that's like the story of God in a nutshell. But if you think about it, at the very heart of that story of God narrative that we always talk about is the rest that God offers us. Jesus tells us, as we heard Ron read in Matthew 11, that Jesus comes and says, my burden is easy, my yoke is light. Take my yoke upon you. My rest is easy. Step into my rest. But when Jesus comes, and it's a very familiar passage, but is Jesus just making that concept up, this new rest that he's talking about? No. Because the whole Old Testament leading up to that point was always pointed at the rest of God. If you think about it, all of Israel's journey of trying to find the promised land was trying to enter God's rest. Think about Israel. For 400 years, early in their history, they were slaves. Slaves who had no rest. Slaves whose taskmasters came and said to them, do more work, and then we're going to take away your straw and keep working just as hard. In many ways, doesn't that sound like our culture today? Do more and more and more with less and less time. But then what does God do? He provides a deliverer through Moses to take them out of their bondage and to take them to a land where they'll find rest. But what's interesting is, was the goal of the Exodus, of getting away from the taskmasters? Was it just so they would be free? No, the goal of getting out of Egypt, of crossing the Red Sea, of making it through the desert, was that they would find the rest of God. If you were to read the book of Exodus, which tells that story, the book of Exodus ends talking about the tabernacle being built, showing that the whole point of redemption was that God and man could dwell together, so that God's rest would be known and experienced. And then what happens next in the story? We heard Ron read that as well. Deuteronomy, the commandment to rest. God gives his people this practice to regularly recognize and hear and be reminded, we were slaves in Egypt, but God has brought us out. And now on this seventh day of the week, we're to remember that. They're given a commandment to rest. But if you were to fast forward through the rest of the story, what do God's people do? Over and over again, they give themselves to taskmasters in body and soul, and they never enter the true rest of God. And ultimately, what they really failed at was finding that rest that Adam had in God, that he was supposed to expand to the rest of creation. Adam failed, and then Israel failed. It's because, as we heard read in Genesis 2, when God finished his work, his creation, he set up his rest. It's his rule, his reign over creation. But then that is lost so quickly. But then Jesus steps on the scene, and what does he say? All of the rest of God that you've been looking for is found when you're in me. True rest only comes when you're found in Jesus, who is the true Israel, who represents what Israel was always supposed to be and to do. But is this a change in the story? I mean, it kind of seems like, okay, well, we're supposed to find the rest of God, but then Jesus shows up and says, no, it's in me. Well, what's interesting is when Jesus shows up in the book of John, particularly, he says, when I'm showing up, I'm only doing what I've already seen my Father doing. This is no change in the story. I'm just doing what I've always seen the Father do. And what did Jesus see the Father do? He saw the Father work. He saw the Father build creation in 6 days. So when Jesus shows up, what does he do? He continues the work. He does the work that Adam and that Israel were always supposed to do. Think about it. Jesus steps into the chaos of creation. And if you read the gospel accounts, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, you see that chaos, that unrest that Jesus stepped into. He stepped into the unrest of broken family, the unrest of broken jobs, the unrest of people who are trying to find reputation or identity, the unrest of people who had too much or too little. Jesus steps into all of that chaos, and he says, come to me and you'll find rest. And he doesn't just do the work, he finishes the work that Adam and Israel were supposed to do. Because they were supposed to conquer God's enemies and bring rest for the people. As Moses rescued Israel from the taskmasters, Jesus says, I'm going to rescue all of my people from the true taskmaster of Satan, sin, and death. And where did Jesus, in many ways, do his greatest work? It's on the cross. Think about the cross. Imagine Jesus on the cross. He's on this cross, hanging in agony, sweating, bleeding, groaning, gasping for breath as his lungs are failing. And what is he doing? He's doing the work. He's completing the work, the unfinished work that Adam and Israel could not do. Jesus is finishing that work. He was being drained of all of his energy as he went through that labor, through that ordeal. The work to bring us into the rest of God, which is why when he literally was grabbing hold of his last breaths, what did he say? The work is done. It's finished. And what's interesting is when the Father finished his work, he rested. When Jesus finished his work, he gives us his rest. The rest that he earned, the rest that he accomplished. He says, this reward, this is yours. You get this rest. So that's the story of God, the rest that we're called into. How do we actually enter into that? What does it mean to practically now? Okay, so we've heard about how we're covering ourselves. We've heard about the story of God calling us into rest. What does it mean for us to enter that rest, though? How do we truly begin to step into that and believe that? Let's look at our last point. Point three, entering the rest of God. What's interesting is the rest of God that we've been describing, we enter it the same way we enter the story of God, through our faith in Jesus, through our faith union, through our belief, through our allegiance to Jesus. Recognizing that it is not my own ability, but Jesus has actually done the work for me. And as I believe that, increasingly more and more throughout my life, that is where I begin to step into this rest. This is where we see true rest, because Jesus accomplished all of the work that I'm trying to do. So what happens now if I actually begin to believe that that work is done? That means I can stop having to prove myself to God. I can stop having to prove myself to other people. We're all trying to achieve some level of work to arrive to a place of rest. But what happens, think about this, if you knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that the work was done, that you had nothing to prove, nothing to accomplish, what would that change in your life? What would change if you knew the work was done? Would you be able to rest? What if you knew your work didn't define you? Would you be able to actually just chill out? Take a weekend off. Stop the endless work. Our constant striving to accomplish, to finish, to achieve, to do more. Would you be able to see, I don't need to be all anxious and panicked about getting everything done. The real work is done. I can actually stop my work and enjoy who God is and the people he's called me to. And this is where then we actually move into the real practice of rest. What does it mean to actually practice rest? So we can ask, what are things that actually recharge you and refresh you? What are those things that if you really, really knew you didn't have to keep working, what would be those things you would do? Things that allow your body and your soul to be refreshed. What do you crave to do but never really get to do? For me, as I was thinking through this, we're all going to have different things. Thinking about a good book with a cup of coffee. It's restful. For you, is it music? Is it the beach? Is it the mountains? Is it just being home on a quiet day with some good friends? Is it no drama? Each of us experiences rest in different ways because each of us is trying to do a different work. And this is where, as I just began to think through, like, what really does it mean to step into rest? It really is freedom from ought, from the drive of here's what you ought to always be doing. And we're going to talk a little bit more about, okay, what's the difference between rest versus laziness, and we have responsibility. So rest doesn't mean, oh, just do whatever you want. That's not what true rest is. But so for me, even this week, as I was thinking through this, like things like, let me just open up the laptop one more time. Let me check my email one more time. So I would say, no, I don't need to do that right now. And it was really interesting. I wasn't even planning on sharing this, but this literally happened 3 days ago. I finished my work one day. I was outside doing a little bit of a workout, but just kind of in my yard. And there were these neighborhood boys that had this go-kart. And they were racing up and down the church parking lot. And so, you know, I'm a nice guy, so I'll wave. Then I realized, like, oh, these kids are out here. They're playing. What if I just kind of hang out for a little bit? What's going to happen? And this is so not me. But because I was able to kind of shut the work off and just be present, eventually the kids were like, hey, excuse me, sir, do you have a hammer that we could use? Yeah, dude, I got you. Went and got a hammer. Something had broken with their go-kart. And again, if you know me, I'm not a mechanic at all. But I do have tools that good friends have given me and that need to help me learn to use. But so these kids had this broken go-kart. So I went and got my tools, got some wrenches and some drills. We started to crank on their go-kart. And I'm not kidding, for the next hour and a half, they got that go-kart humming. They gave me a ride on their go-kart. We were able to then give them some like seltzer waters, and we hung out, and it was just really funny. I was like, oh man, you guys should try this seltzer water. It tastes like Sprite. And they were like, dog, this is not Sprite. This does not taste like Sprite. But I realized these guys all live up the street from me. And they told me about their schools and where they're going, and told me about their girlfriends. And they're like, you got a girlfriend? I was like, I got a wife. She's great. Do you want to meet her? They're like, yeah, bring your wife out. We want to meet her. So then Jana came out, and we literally had this hour and a half of just getting to know these guys. Because I didn't have to go back to the work. But normally I would have. I would have been like, hey, you know, I got 10 minutes. Take the tools. I got to go back inside and keep working. Again, the story isn't, oh, wow, look at what Nate did. The point is, God actually helped me say, stop the work and just be present. And this is where we see, as we wrap up here, that this is where our rest is not just for our joy, but it's actually for the joy of our city. Let's think about rest as we close here. Rest and our time. For many of us, serving our neighbors and serving our city, serving those who don't yet know Jesus, has everything to do with our time. Our money is not our problem for most of us. Our time is the currency that we don't want to spend. We will throw our money at any problem in the world before we will give it our time. I can give you money for that, but I can't commit to do that. Let me know if you need money, and I can give that. I mean, I'm the one who says these things. Maybe you're like me. But what if we realized that because Jesus accomplished that deep work, our true rest is secured? What about my time? What do I do with my time? What would your time mean in relation to serving people who you know can never give you anything back? Who can never repay the favor? Would your time still be so valuable and precious if you really knew, I can give my time away, the work is done? Would you need to keep working to get ahead? No, you could give your time away. So this is where the discipline of rest frees us from our taskmaster of time and the precious hours that we guard and protect so closely. We can actually begin to give that away. And so, to close, this is what rest and true Sabbath realization is about: the freedom, the ability to dwell in time and space without being bombarded by the cost of doing so. Rest frees us to be present, to be alert, to be God's people planted where He has us right now. Rest puts us back into that true story of what God's doing. And so I wanted to close today by just giving some time for us to get really practical. Kind of have some questions prepared, and I'm going to ask Scott and Russell to come up, and we're just going to have a little quick dialogue of just some Q&A. I've got some questions prepared. Maybe if we have time, we can take some questions from you guys. But just in many ways, this is still very theological, but what does it mean to get really practical with some of this?
Can I stand at your left side, Nate?
You can. You can. That's perfect. So yeah, so some of these questions, I think, yeah, we have them up on the screen. So let's just kind of go through one at a time. Let's put the questions up there after the points. I would just love it if each of you guys could just take a minute and kind of just share with us what some of these questions, how you'd answer them. So Scott, do you want to go first with this one?
Sure. How do you take a theology of rest into an everyday practice of rest. I think it takes commitments to do something that gives you life to re-energize your affections for Jesus. And that is going to be something different for every person. The old Scottish pastors 100 years ago, they had like five responsibilities, and the first four were all pastoral. And the fifth one was very weird. The fifth responsibility of a Scottish pastor was to have a garden. Isn't that weird? Where they had to actually go out and garden every day as a practice of rest, of getting away from what you do every day, from something very different, very distinct, and that you could then go and get your mind off of things and recharge. And when we say recharge, it's just not to get rest so you can have more energy the next day, but it's to recharge your affections, because what is really going on is not just your physical over and over and over again, but it's the internal realities of your heart and your mind racing, and finding some practice where you can get away and do something you would never do to get all of your mind off of other things and just recharge on what God is doing in your life, I think is very helpful. So one thing I do, this is not very restful, but it is super restful, is I run. Isn't that weird? How do I rest? I run, okay? And the reason is because I get a half an hour away from 14 kids and 40,000 emails, and I can do nothing but do what? Think. You know, and it's just a time for me to get away with God and yell at God and scream at God and get home and be wicked tired. But does that make sense? Like, and that's just something I've committed to do throughout the week to actually help recharge my mind. So,
great. Any thoughts?
I would actually completely agree with, and I just have theologically, we joke a lot of times how theology impacts practice, but we never give you ways how it does. And I just think of Paul in 1 Corinthians 15. He spends 57 verses going through why the resurrection matters. And he spends one verse applying it. And that one verse basically says, Jesus got out of the grave, so you don't have to worry about your work. It actually matters. And so the whole point of rest is actually, I think if we understand that as our story, that Jesus actually got out of the grave and brought the new creation, it translates into a good practice in that when we take those moments, in those moments, we're not still grasping at, do I have to prove myself? Does this matter? Because Jesus is our good King reigning, and he will actually bring all things that he completed from heaven to earth, we can actually rest in that. And so in those moments when we step away, we, in our hearts, tempted to say, you don't need to rest, there's so much more to do. We can actually say, no, Jesus is actually reigning because he got out of the grave. This isn't in vain. Rest. And the Spirit can use that. So
it's good. It's good. Put the next question up. Scott, you want to attack that? What are ways we can practice rest as community?
Yeah. Everyone's community, this is where this community is hard, because everyone likes to do something different. Does that make sense? My MC doesn't go running with me. That's where you come together, and I think eating meals together is probably the easiest, most stressless way to
stressful. Stressful. It's stressful.
That was my Freudian slip right there. But I just think eating a meal together and having to sit down and just talk with each other, does that make sense? I don't know if you've experienced that in your MC. You just sit down, have a meal together, and what does it produce in your soul? If your kids are a bit well-behaved that night, and if the food is good, and everything else is going fine, it usually is that. But what I'm trying to say is, like, a community of rest is hard because everyone likes to kind of do different things. But one thing we have found in our group is that just eating together produces this recharging, this re-energizing, this reorientation of our heart to be committed to each other and be committed to the people God has called us to. So the other thing I've done with our MC is we go on vacations together. and go out places together, do unique things together. So that's also produced quite a bit of rest for us as a group, too.
Yeah, and I would just add to that, just listen. I think a lot of times with we're very selfish with our rest in the sense that we project on everyone else the stuff that relaxes us and then look at them like they have a third eye when they don't like to do what we want to do. It's like, why don't you like to insert our favorite thing in the world to someone who is uniquely different from us? And so again, I think serving people is listening, and in listening we understand and we submit and love one another and how we rest. And to be honest, sometimes a meal is not restful for people because someone has to worry about the cooking and the cleaning and all those things. But for other people it is because we're lazy slobs. And and it's listening, and I think it's mutuality within that rest, within community. It's going, what recharges you? If we do this, how would this affect you? And it's really then talking through those things and going, you know what? I will give up a little bit of my rest so I can press in to your rest in that moment, and vice versa. Like just practically yesterday, Kristen needed time, and so she's like, can you do some stuff? And I'm like, yeah, Saturday's my one of my big days of rest because I work a 9-to-5. I don't get like blocks of time throughout the week. So Saturday's a big day for me and our family, and she's like, can you vacuum? I'm like, I could have been like hashtag Sabbath, hashtag no work. And it was just like, it was fun because the girls dusted, I vacuumed, and it gave her a break to do some stuff she needed to. And so it's listening within that, and that's a micro community, but then larger, it's like, you know, you talk with your missional community and your friends, what does this look like for you to rest? And you listen and you submit and you work with that through each other and love each other in that process.
So. That's good. That's good. Why don't you just keep talking on that? Because question three is, how are we to understand rest versus laziness?
So traditionally, if you look at laziness, I think we have a big misunderstanding of laziness in two ways. I like to think of the categories of sloth and laziness. If you ever heard of the classic seven deadly sins, sloth is that. And we think of laziness as like the guy who just sits around all day doing nothing. You know, Margaritaville, basically. sounds actually really good right now. But we think of that as laziness. And if you take a step back and you look at just theologically in the history of the church, laziness isn't so much defined what we think as doing nothing. It's more sloth. It's purposelessness. It's not having, you know, to put in our modern kind of lingo, it's not having a story governing you and having purpose. And so I think, first of all, and I'll kind of get here the long way, but I think we as a society have so many competing stories that we don't have a story that governs us, that we're willing to basically be that next notification chaser. Oh, ding this, ding that. And we go and we just constantly are jumping from thing to thing. Whether that's, now it's digitally, the next notification pops up. Ooh, Facebook, ooh, Instagram, ooh, my game's telling me I need to check this. And we're constantly going and going and going and going and going because we're purposelessness in our lives. Instead of having a governing story that says this is what God has called us to do as a people, to be his people in the world, and this is what that looks like for us, and chasing hard after that. Because then you can easily start cutting out everything. I think that's a huge point, is we are a very slothful people in that we will chase everything else instead of chasing after that main purpose. And then within that is, once you know what that main purpose is, then the laziness comes in, because laziness then is saying, I'm not going to chase after this main purpose by doing something else at the wrong time. Having a time to binge on Netflix may not be the best rest for some people, but for other people it may very well be. But doing that when you're supposed to be chasing after what God has given you to do, whether that's work or family or life, that's laziness, because it's now chasing after something else. Good. And that's where, like, we have to get this mindset that doing something or doing nothing or taking a break or enjoying life is not being lazy. It's when we're doing that in place of something that God has called us to do in the right time to do that thing, we're doing that other thing, that's laziness. And we need to eliminate this guilt in our culture that taking a break is okay, or we need to also eliminate this kind of giggle and snicker at, oh, I just binged on Netflix all day when I should have been doing this. We need to go, no, you're being lazy. Mm-hmm. And we need to call you out on that because you should have been doing X, Y, and Z. But we also need to be, why did you work through the weekend when you could have gone to a movie with us, or you could have eaten, or you could have gotten this? Because now you're no longer being lazy, you're being slothful, you're missing the purposes God has called you to by taking a rest to go back to those purposes. So.
Good. Good. Got one other question, but do you want to hit that one first? Question three, or do you want to jump into the four?
I'll just say this quickly. Laziness produces death, and rest is life-giving. Sitting on Netflix for 4 hours when you're all done, could that not be producing death, more death than you? Like, that's how I make the quick distinction. What I just did to this reorient my mind, my heart, my affections, to help me go do what God has called me to do, or did this just produce more death in me? So that's how I would just think through those things, but yeah.
Yeah, it's good. Let's just look at this last question, and Scott, you can just offer some thoughts on this. How should we think about a specific day of rest versus finding rest in general?
Yeah, so, there's a lot of the Reformed world who still thinks that Sunday is the new Christian Sabbath, and I went to school with people who wouldn't even go out to eat because when you go out to eat, you make other people work on the Sabbath, and that is violating the fourth commandment. You know what I mean? Like, there's people out there who still think that you should just take a whole day. And I'm not of that particular stripe. I think Jesus came and gives us every day of rest. Every day we find our rest in him. And so what I would just say is, seriously, what works for you? The issue to me is not when you do it, per se, as much as are you doing it and what is it doing in you? And based on your life and your context and how many kids you have and where you work and what your wife is like and all these different things, it might be good for you just to do what? Take one day off and do that. My life, that doesn't work for me. Like, I take blocks of time off. Like, I'll take a morning off here, an afternoon off there, and another afternoon off there. Does that make sense? Like, I'll take different blocks of time to actually do things, practices for life. You know, so for me, I'm just like, what are you going to do? What intentional practice are you going to commit to allow life, the Spirit of God, to recharge you to be what you should be? So I would just have you think through those categories.
Great. Great. Thanks, guys. Let's. Why don't you all stand? I'm going to close us in prayer, and the band is going to come up, and we'll close by singing some songs. Let's pray together. Jesus, we do thank you that in you we actually find the rest that we're looking for. We confess, Jesus, that we are trying to find rest in so many other things. I ask, Jesus, that you by your Spirit would actually help us to even be good family to each other and to ask questions and to receive feedback from each other, even about the work that we're always doing. I pray you'd give us love and grace as we do that. Ultimately, not just so we would be speaking into each other's lives, but Jesus, so that we would actually be a more faithful picture of what your family looks like, of what the kingdom of God advancing looks like. And so, Jesus, I do pray for each of us here that you would help us to believe this more deeply. But I also, Jesus, specifically pray for the people that know that deep within them is a deep, deep unrest. I pray, Spirit, that you would bring the voice of Jesus as a healing balm to their souls, to those that struggle with stopping the work. Whatever that means in their soul, Jesus, I ask that you would meet us, that you would meet these folks who are deeply struggling to find rest. And I pray, Spirit, even now as we sing and then as we go from here, that you would continually be doing, Spirit, what you do best of pointing us back to Jesus. And it's in his name we pray. Amen.